Hello and welcome to another Physical Activity and Wellbeing in Education podcast episode with me, Kate Stevenson, Education Advisor and Physical Education Specialist in County Durham. We continue our PE School Sport Physical Activity and Wellbeing dialogue today with another one of our delightful guests. So good morning, listeners. So delighted to have Mr. Christopher Cook with us this morning. Chris swam for Great Britain in the Olympics, World Championship, European Championship, and competed for England in the Commonwealth Games. Pretty awesome CV, Chris. Double Commonwealth Championship. I hope I get this right. British record holder, Commonwealth record holder, world medalist, European medalist and Olympic finalist.
Wow, you're doing well.
I am. According to Wikipedia, the source of all fountains of knowledge, you specialise in the breaststroke, Chris.
Yes.
And let's not forget, 2006 BBC Northeast Sports Personality of the Year. So listeners, that gives you a little insight, especially the last one there about the fabulous Chris. And we're so delighted to work with him an awful lot in County Durham. And I know, Chris, that you present to a large audience sharing your experiences and learnings from performing at that top level. Can you talk me through some of the highlights, the 2008 Olympics, for instance, and your Commonwealth gold medals in particular, I guess?
Yeah, so it sounds crazy when you were talking there. You know, it feels like someone else's story, you know, sometimes when I hear it played back or when I get introduced onto a stage, I think, oh my God, is it my turn? Is that me? Am I getting introduced? It's crazy.
I forgot to press the button that brought in the applause and the fanfare.
I am disappointed, like. But yeah, it does seem like a little bit of a whirlwind, if I'm honest, you know, and from the inside, it's really, really, how do I put it? It's really mundane and boring. I don't want to downplay it, but it's true. You know, you spend a long, vast amount of your time staring at a black line on the bottom of a pool, or you're in a gym throwing yourself about, and then you go and get some food, and then you're back again a couple of hours later, and you do that every day, a couple of times a day. So, yeah, when I look back, I think the achievements are for when you finish, not for when you're doing it. I think the achievements are, like, I have so much pride now looking back, and I go, oh my God, that was me. I did that. I'm only a little lad from Shields, you know, there's nothing exceptional about us. And that's kind of my message when I go out there, you know, standing on the podium at the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne 2006 was kind of, I suppose, a defining moment for me. It was a moment when all the work come together and, yeah, there was a big double thumbs up at the end of it because there were so many times when it wasn't. There were so many championships where you didn't hit the headlines, or if you did hit the headlines, it was for a disappointing reason. And that's hard because nobody goes into a competition wanting to lose or wanting to not give their best. So, yeah, finishing at the Olympics in 2008, I retired, or expired, as I always say, because I got to around the age of 30, which is quite old in swimming, I guess. And my last race was the Olympic final alongside Michael Phelps when he picked up his 8th gold medal. And I haven't raced again since. And I want to tell my grandkids eventually later down the line, you know, when I do have them, you know, I want to say, you know, my last race was an Olympic final. And if you want to do something, just get out there and do it, regardless of what people say.
That's wonderful. You talk an awful lot about that commitment to that journey along the way and how to instill the motivation behind that. I know you've worked with children and young people in County Durham and elsewhere in the country around the Inspire project in County Durham. And then you've been working with Team GB as well on another inspirational aspect to build those characteristics and personality. Would you like to talk a little bit about that, Chris?
Yeah, definitely. So when I retired in 2009, pretty much straight after Beijing Olympics, I spent a couple of months kind of just training and seeing what I wanted to do, but I pretty much knew that I didn't want to go for another 4-year cycle. And I didn't know what to do with my life, Kate. I honestly did not know what to do. And it was a bit, how can I put it? It was very, very stressful, very weird, almost out of body experience. And no one was really talking about how athletes retire or anything like that or need support. So what I was going through, I hid away from everyone. And I probably dismantled a lot of friendships and relationships on course of the journey that I went on. But I remember I started just going into some primary schools, some secondary schools, sharing my story. Didn't know what to do or what to say. But watching the reaction of youngsters and teachers, I was thinking, oh, that went down well. Or that didn't go down that well. I'll take that out. And before I knew it, I started to gain a bit of reputation. Got this phone call one night, about 3 years into retirement, got this phone call one night from this guy. And he called me up, and it was about 10 to 9 at night. And he said, what are you doing tomorrow? I need a speaker. You're my desperation call. It wasn't the greatest start to a conversation. And he said, I said, well, I'm not doing anything. It's a day off tomorrow, but I'm quite willing to work. And so we started to chat about some of the detail. And I was packing the car as I was talking, because I knew I'd have to kind of get ready for the next day. And I said, just out of interest, where are you? He said, Kent. I was like, oh my goodness. I was up in Wall's End at the time. That's where I was living. So I was like, right, you're going to have to sort me out a hotel for tonight. And I got there at 2 o'clock in the morning, ended up getting up at 8 o'clock the next day. And I did a job for him across all these primary schools come together for this sports festival, but they've been let down by a big name in sport. I don't know who to this day let them down. I'm still desperate to find out.
Yeah.
And he ended up filling my diary as a thank you for 3 weeks in Kent. And it was only supposed to be 3 weeks. And due to demand from the schools and the teachers, it ended up being 7 years. And I went down every week. And that was the program that we called Inspire off the back of the Olympics in London. And I was desperate to bring it back. And I brought it back to the Northeast and we ran it in Durham. It was such a good project. And it ran for such a long time. And I just loved it. I loved trotting around schools, working with young people, hopefully inspiring them to think, well, if he can do it, I can do it. That was my message.
Yeah.
And that's morphed and changed, yeah.
Yeah. And it's wonderful, isn't it? Because actually it's about the journey, isn't it? And it's about having those role models. And you do come across so well when you're talking to youngsters, Chris. And you've got two of your own, is that right?
Yeah, a little boy and a little girl, yeah. So 7 and 10. So they're still very young and, you know, they're desperate for their dreams and goals and whatever they are, they can chase them in sport or non-sport.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's about that, isn't it? Because it's not just, you don't just talk about swimming or your career pathway within swimming. It's about all sport and it's about all learning as well, building those characteristics and the personality traits that allow you to thrive in whatever you choose to do, but having those options as well. I was talking to you before we started recording, Chris, about me sitting on a beach in Northumberland, waffling to listeners.
Yeah.
But really getting to think about swimming in particular, and obviously on the back of that, being delighted that you could join us today. And I was thinking about, you know, the learning journey for swimming is so crucial, and it's a very difficult physical capability to achieve. And I know you're involved in swim teaching with your swim buddies.
Yeah.
And do you want to talk to me about how that makes you feel when you see that progress of youngsters learning to swim from that very first splash your face or blow bubbles?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, me and my wife, Erica, we run our learn to swim business called Swim Buddies in Darlington. And we've got, well, pre-COVID, we had nearly 1,000 children. Obviously, COVID's put restrictions on that. But we are coming back, and we will get back there. But, yeah, we started it nearly 8 years ago now. And it was just off the back of a conversation of, you know, what would you love to do? And I wanted to put something back into sport. And some of my best times were when I was learning to swim at Temple Park Leisure Centre in South Shields. And my teacher, Linda Woodhouse, I remember really well, just making it really fun and really engaging. And I wanted that for children. I wanted children to find the fun in working hard as well, because hard work is the reward. You know, we tend to veer away from that with children and just put play, play, play. But it isn't always about play. You know, it's about finding the joy in working hard and really looking back and going, I did that. And that sense of pride. And I feel like we've got that in the business. So, and I get in the business and teach myself as well. So I get in and I teach the little ones and I just love it. And there's nothing better, Kate, than watching a 4 or 5 year old coming in, kicking and screaming because they don't want to go swimming. And then, yeah. You know, leaving in 3, 4, 5 years time, just swimming like a fish and just enjoying it and going on to pastures new. But it is so important as a fundamental that we teach swimming. You know, school swimming is a little bit hit and miss because it's one of those activities, well, I suppose like many, but swimming in particular, is you're not going to learn it overnight. You know, you can't just cram all of your sessions into a week-long lesson. It takes time. We're all in this mad rush now in society. You know, everything from ordering parcels, you know, if you don't get it within 24 hours, you're disappointed. It's crazy. And you're like, where's my parcel? Or if your text message doesn't send within seconds, you're slamming your phone. You're like, what's wrong with this? Well, it's kind of got to go up the space to a satellite and back down. It's doing a pretty big job. Yeah. You know, we're in this crazy rush and time's been warped now. But with activities such as swimming, we have to accept that we need to turn up, show up and repeat until we get it. And with that comes this sense of reward like no other. You can't just buy your way through it. You can't pay your way through it. You've got to put it down in hard work, effort and commitment. And that's the bit that I love about sport, is we can take as many shortcuts as we want, but there's nothing better than just taking that journey yourself and learning to go with the ups and the downs. And I say this to parents all the time. You know, they constantly come at you going, my son's not progressing. I'm like, good.
Yeah.
And I just leave that. But they're not progressing. I'm like, good. Let them work it out. Stop rescuing them. Let them work it out. And they will learn that lesson right there and then. And it's amazing. And they have more fun when they do that. And you almost leave them to trip over the answers themselves. It's amazing.
It's so crucial, isn't it? That's a really good point about it taking time and not rushing the process. And I think, you know, as many of the listeners will be teachers in particular, that's something that, you know, they probably need to also hear, because the pressures of school life and pressures put on teaching staff and youngsters is immense.
Yeah.
And that swimming provision in school in particular, which you know, the three aims of the National Curriculum Swimming Program, it is a levelling up, really. It's about all children across the nation having that minimum amount of swimming.
Yeah.
And yet we don't always have it as such a high profile in our school provision as we should. Or it's that tiny little blasted amount that is provided, which isn't sufficient, and it isn't doesn't have that time scale to allow them to make progress in a smaller way.
So true. And there's a big difference, you know, and my coach was big on this when I was younger. He said, you know, we're not just building a skill, we're building a habit.
Yeah.
And a habit doesn't happen over 2 or 3 weeks. A habit happens over months and years. And actually, that habit of me turning up and doing physical activity is still with me. Now I'm 42 and I still wake up going, right, where am I going to put in my fitness today? Because that's really important. Even if I am hitting the road for a few hours in the car, I prioritize fitness. Why? Because when I was 7, 8, 9, 10 and beyond, I was building that habit. It wasn't just about the skill.
Yeah, that's a good point about physical activity as well, Chris. So in County Durham, we have the Active 30 Durham campaign built around the Chief Medical Officer's recommendations for that 30 to 60 minutes of moderate to vigorous activity. 30 within school, the other 30 at home. So we're aiming for 60 minutes daily. And sometimes that shocks people, you know.
Yeah.
They're like, how can I put an hour in? And it's not necessarily 1 hour on the treadmill. It's about those accumulative minutes and hours that build so that you're less sedentary. And it becomes a life building habit. Like you said, it's embedded in your everyday so that we sit less and we move more. But I think, you know, with the busyness of modern everyday living as adults, we sometimes need reminding that actually probably need to turn the computer off for a moment, take a quick walk, or and get into those healthy habits. And swimming in particular is so important about, you know, that life skill, that life saving skill. I did write down, and I think I talked about in my last podcast, that, you know, because of COVID, you felt the effects with your business, but it was something like 8 million lessons and leisure services were cancelled because of COVID. And I'm thinking, you know, that probably figure doesn't necessarily always include the swimming provision, which completely stopped at a certain point. And for some children, the swimming in school is the only access they have. So that's an awful lot of COVID C, you know, Generation C, they keep calling it, don't they? Coming through with poor chances within Learn to Swim programs and opportunities. So we're going to see a little bit of a knock-on effect of that, and we need to raise the profile of importance. So talk to me a little bit about drown prevention and the, is it hashtag respect the water campaign?
I love it. You know, I feel really lucky because I get involved in quite a few projects and programs, and this one's a really important one. It comes up every summer holidays. There's always a kind of lead up into the summer holidays to respect the water, think about your actions, that sort of thing. And it's generally aimed at young people, sort of secondary school-ish. And, you know, I think the most important part of all this is, you know, during COVID, we've all been locked away from the things we love. We spent all last summer not knowing what the heck was going on. And this summer we've come in with a little bit more of an insight. But I think people have almost been let loose. And with that, the drownings is clearly going to go up, and which is just, it's heartbreaking to think about it. So I think there's a couple of things for me. One is that foundation of learning to swim is really important, but also that wider awareness. Just because you can swim doesn't mean to say that you can just step into a river, a beck, a weir. You know, they're very, very different environments from learning to swim in a nice 25 meter, 29 degree, fluffy towels at the end of your lane, all of that, to jumping in a river where you don't know what's underneath, you don't know how fast it's flowing, and the also the temperature as well. There's so many differences. And I noticed this when I finished swimming. I decided to go and do some open water swimming with a wetsuit on and all of that. And I noticed a huge difference. There was a massive adjustment that I had to make, even just to my breathing, the way I placed my head, and everything, and the temperature. So it's just so important that every year we keep this campaign going. We make it a kind of a in the faces of people and in their ears, just purely and simply because we don't want unnecessary lives to be lost. It's just, it is unnecessary. Yeah. And it's heartbreaking. Every summer this happens. Every summer.
I wrote down here, 254 people died from accidental drowning in 2020, Chris. So, you know, what that figure's going to be, you know, in the 2021. We already know of some fatalities from this summer. It needs to be, you know, really targeted in those summer months, but also a cumulative. You know, I think it should be a conversation throughout an academic year in school.
100%. You
know, and making sure we target it right from reception age about water safety, all the way year six and beyond into secondary, and targeting it to the audience, not just the one-off assembly, perhaps. We need those because we need it, you know, constant at the mind. My niece and nephew in the last podcast sang a song, I don't know where they learnt it from, but they were. I was talking to them about water safety, and they had this gorgeous song, so I rehearsed them into singing on the podcast. But for them, I mean, their swimming journey, you know, they're really keen. They have their swimming lessons and they love it. We do an awful lot of water-based activity in the sea up in Northumberland. So they're on little kayaks, they're on paddle boards and things now with myself and their granddad and their daddy and mummy. And, you know, I've noticed each summer they get better and more confident in the water. And where we go is perfect. It's very shallow, but there's still riptides and all of that we have to be aware of. So as adults, we have to constantly supervise. But you talk there a little bit about that difference in swimming in the swimming pool to swimming in the sea or whatever. And it is huge. You know, they've got their wetsuits on, gives a little bit of buoyancy. But, you know, we're swimming in things that are not even past their knee, really. But I'm still trying to get them to take their feet off the sand and tread water and feel what it's like to float and really be water confident. They don't like the salty water in their eyes, but you know, jumping off the board into the water to feel what it's like to submerge, but to then float and how to build that skill. So, if they ever were in difficulty, maybe something is still there. And we forget that, don't we?
We do.
When children are running into the sea or into rivers or adults as well, because it's hot and it's the summer and we think that's what we should do, and we're not always safe.
It's true, and it's so important. I think there was a time when I was out in Australia, obviously during my swimming, I went to Australia a lot, which was awesome. But going backwards and forwards, I would often try different types of training programs. And I went out there one summer, or their summer, which is our winter, and we did a little bit of beach training, which is great. You're on the beach, it's early morning. And the lifeguard had said, just keep yourself to the left-hand side between the flags. And there's a group of us, and we were like, oh, you know, we're Olympic swimmers, thanks very much. The ego was truly on. And I'll never forget, we swam out this buoy and back. And on my way back in, it felt like I was on a treadmill and I couldn't get any further past the second set of waves. And I was coming back and it started to freak me out a little bit. And I managed to get beyond the waves. And as I was coming out the water, I was the last one out. This wave hit us and took us under and took me back to the original spot. And you know, it was at that moment that I realized that I didn't respect the water. And it just showed me a lesson, and I was petrified, genuinely petrified to go back in, because that feeling and that power, the sheer power and the force it felt on my body, there was no way, as strong as I was in the water, that I could fight that force.
Yeah.
And it's that difference is what we're really talking about. That's the difference we're talking about, that force of nature, whether it be the temperature, whether it be the power, whether it be just the magnitude. That's what we're talking about. And there's a big, big difference between learning to swim and staying safe in outdoor swimming.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a really good message. So you heard it here, everybody. Olympic swimmer, Chris, struggling in the sea. And that's a really strong message, isn't it, about the force of nature. Thanks so much for saying that. So apart from the doom, gloom and our, you know, thing about risk prevention, swimming also builds capabilities and broadens exposure and experience to other things, doesn't it, as well as that skill set that we want to build with children, such as when you're working on your Inspire project. Can you talk to me about any particular successes maybe with your youngsters, either in the water or dry land, around some of those projects that you've done in your conversation with children and how they feel about their learning journeys?
Yeah, definitely. I remember there's one in particular I'm really proud of down in Kent. And I got the chance to work with a cluster of, I call them education establishments. So they're PRUs, pupil referral units. So generally speaking, most of these students are, they've either been kicked out of two or three schools, you know, society's kind of let them down a little bit. They've let themselves down, if they're perfectly honest with you. And when you get chatting to them, they're really open about it. They will call themselves the bad lads and stuff like that. And there's a group of boys in particular I was working with in this PRU, almost like a prison, if I'm honest with you. It was like a secure unit down in Kent. And these boys, they wouldn't handle any length of particular session. So a 50-minute session you couldn't do. You maybe do 20 minutes, let them blow off a bit of steam, and then another 20 minutes. And we kept going backwards and forwards doing these sessions. And most of them were really, really disengaged, Kate. Like, it was mayhem at times. Yeah. And there was this one lad in particular who was sat on the front, and there was a point at which, I think it was the third session in, he stopped clarting about, he stopped messing about, and he asked a really profound question. And I was like, I think I've got him. Like, on the inside, I was like, I think I've got one. I always look for one person in every audience, one person that I could just get my message across to. anyway, throughout the course of the day, he would come and sit next to us during lunch, and I was thought, there's another signal, I've got him here. And I was getting in his ear a little bit, just mentoring him as we go, because that's where you get the real breakthroughs, in the break time, in the lunch time, walking down the corridors. You get some amazing breakthroughs there.
Yeah.
And this boy in particular turned his life around in the space of 4 or 5 years. He kept in touch through his key worker. He went and got his gas safe certificate, became a British Gas, I think, or he worked for a big gas firm, and became a boiler installer, and just took his career off in a completely different direction from a guy who would, by his own admission, create havoc in his community. His thing was climbing cranes, the highest crane in the dock,
yeah,
and climbing along it and putting a flag there. They used to have a competition to do that between the boys in this secure unit when they got out. And they would brag about it, they'd put it on social media, it was crazy. And he just ditched it all. He just ditched it all. And they sent me a photograph of him with his little girl and his partner. Eventually went on to obviously have a family. And just that, for me, was real success. It wasn't about someone standing on a podium. It wasn't about someone even joining a swimming club or anything like that. I wasn't there for that. I was there to just help someone have a glimpse of a life they could have if they wanted it. And it was that third session in, whatever was said, whatever was done, it just clicked with him. It just clicked. And it's those stories amongst the thousands that it makes me feel amazing that it was that moment. I feel privileged to be that person. And whether he attunes it to that or not, for me, there was something in that moment that I was meant to be there and he was meant to listen and hear it.
Oh, that's lovely. Thanks so much for sharing. And Chris, you know, things like that are a bit of a snowball effect.
Yeah.
So, you know, those values that he's put into play,
yeah,
will, you know, go into his parenting. So definitely, his children are on a different course now than perhaps they may have been.
Yeah.
Or they may not have existed. You know, because his pathway has changed completely, and to be part of that process.
Yeah.
And that's just one example. You know, there'll be so many that you'll have supported through these sort of programs. And that's a really great example.
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah. So, but thinking of now, I've got you sat in front of me, and I know when I dropped you a message to entice you into this podcast, I didn't arm wrestle you to do it or pull too many strings, but you were pretty busy at the time, and I remember thinking, why have I just sent that message? What was I thinking? It's the middle of the Olympics.
Yeah.
Tokyo 2020 is in full play. Of course Chris is going to be involved. So share with me, Chris, what it's like to be back with Team GB, doing what you were doing, and some of the successes that we've achieved.
Oh, yeah. So I feel really lucky. I put forward to, I applied for a program called the Ambition Program, which the BOA, the British Olympic Association, run. And it's Team GB's kind of flagship mentoring program, if you like. So what they generally do is, a few years ago, less than 8% of Olympians, first-time Olympians, medal. So the stats tell you that 92% of first-time Olympians take an Olympics to get into an Olympics. So it's a second Olympics where they'll feel their success comes. So what Team GB did was, or the BOA did, was they thought, well, could we take them to experience all the stuff that they're going to get to do, but not compete? So they get a kind of flavour of what the Games is about, because it is very different. It's a very different environment. It's like a huge global festival in a city, and then you've got to perform and focus, and there's so many distractions going on.
Yes.
And so that's what they did. So over the years, they'll take them to the previous games. So they'll identify athletes who potentially could go to Paris and then take them to Tokyo. So they would identify them for Rio, but take them to London 4 years beforehand.
Wow.
So in London, I was really lucky to be involved in the Ambition program. And it was very much a take them around the venues, show them what it's like, make observations, have a mentor and chat about it and coach them, that sort of thing. Now, when we came in to go to Tokyo, I was one of three that were chosen alongside Hannah England, who is a track athlete, Lizzie Simmons, who was a swimmer as well. So I shared the team with Lizzie, and we pulled together a program that would show the young athletes around Tokyo. But unfortunately, when COVID hit, that was the first thing that got cancelled because it's kind of non-essential. They weren't competing. So we were devastated. We planned for a year for it. It got cut short. And we thought, you know what? There's no reason why we can't just make this a virtual one. So we planned to make it virtual. But as COVID starts to release a little bit more and we're coming out a bit, we got the chance to bring everyone together. So we took them down to the London venues. And we just stayed in the UK. And we created a kind of a learning program as opposed to kind of a recce program. Go out and have a look at it. And it's just been honestly amazing, Kate. Like just watching these athletes who are fantastic at what they do just gobble up all of the information we were giving them and watching them chat amongst each other, sharing amongst sports that they never get the chance to. You know, equestrian talking to track athletes. It was like they would never, ever get the chance to meet or cross paths. And it's just set them on, for me, it's set them on this course for this is here for you if you want it. Come and get it. And it's just, there was athletes there, and we've got to understand there's athletes there who were nearly going to make Tokyo, and they didn't. So for us, it might have been a bit of a disappointment for them to turn up to this, because it was kind of second best. They walked away like, listen, I came in disappointed, but I'm leaving just with my heart filled with so much inspiration. I can't wait to get back to training. And that for me was just job done. It was amazing.
Wow. And have we got anyone in particular we need to be looking out for Paris?
There's so many. There are so many. I mean, when you consider that in 2012, Lizzie Yarnold, this Bob Skeleton, she came on the 2012 program as a winter athlete, but on a summer program. Yeah. And a couple of years later became Olympic champion. You know, she went from zero to hero overnight. And she attuned a lot of it to that ambition program. She said, you know, that was the thing that opened my eyes, that set me on the course. And it's just that little bit of extra something that is not quite involved in everyday training that just lifts your head up and makes you look at the horizon. Yeah. And yeah, I feel so lucky and privileged to be involved in it. So many athletes went for that post and I was very fortunate.
Yeah. So amazing. That's a really good insight into how it works. And the success of that then. So I presume that's something that they will continue, the Inspire project. And
hopefully,
it's a great model, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about, like you say, you know, once you're competing, you've got all those additional pressures to cope with.
Yeah.
And the whole festival atmosphere.
Yeah.
But wow, amazing. So would you say that you know, what has it been like for you now that not retired, but you know, you're not competing in that way. But what skills have you taken from the Olympics and the Commonwealth and what have you that allowed you to do your new pathway? So, you know, speaking like this you know, having to talk. I mean, did you have to talk to reporters and journalists and things when you were competing, Chris? And you'll have been rather young at the time because, like me, you're really young still. I think you're actually slightly younger than me, but we'll not tell the audience too loudly that. But you know, did they support you to prepare for that? Because some athletes struggle with that aspect, and yet I think it's requested or it's a something that they have to do. Is that right?
Yeah, you get media training, but it's very much, at the time, it was very kind of static. You know, it's very much like, don't do this, don't do that. You know, if you get asked this question, you don't have to answer it. I think the world's changed a lot since I was swimming. You know, social media's facilitated that a lot. And I think people will not accept now, the general public will not accept now, just athletes being a robot. They want to know who's behind the performance. That's it. And social media is a great opportunity to do that, but it also can be a bit of a trap. You know, the amount of athletes who say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing, or they've said something 10 years ago and it gets dragged up as soon as they become a hero. They've got to be really, really careful about how they do that. But yeah, there's loads of skills that I've brought across from swimming, loads of skills I had to ditch because it's very insular. You know, I was very, you're very cocooned. in the sport. You only see the sport. You only do the sport. So since coming out, I've got to be honest with you, I'm having more fun now than I ever have done. And I feel like every year that goes on, there's another level I kind of peel back of enjoyment. I feel like I'm just finding my groove. I feel more comfortable in my skin than I've ever felt. And I can't quite 100% put my finger on where that's coming from. I think a lot of it's to do with just age and just not caring about what people think anymore.
Maturity.
I think I'm finally maturing, which is nice. But I think, you know, what I read a book ages ago called What Got Me Here Won't Get Me There. And it's all about using the skills that have got you to where you are, but understanding that that new level is going to bring new devils. You know, if you move from being, I don't know, teacher to deputy head, there's a big shift there. How people treat you, how you treat yourself, how you grow in that environment. And we've got to get used to that step up. Some things you lose, some things you gain. That's life. Yeah. And moving out of swimming taught me that. That was a big, big lesson in, I suppose, you know, work out what you're going to take forward, work out what you need to take, and then just enjoy growing your skills. But I think the most important one was being willing to start again. That was the thing that I need. That was my biggest challenge. I wasn't willing to start again. I wanted to be successful. I wanted, but that was my ego talking. That was, you know, I can't fail. Well, of course you can. I made a career out of going from one failure to the next until I got success. And it was letting go of that and just almost being childlike again. I'm just experimenting. I'm just going out there and trying something new. It's okay. And what I found was nobody else was keeping tabs on my failures like I thought they were. They weren't going, oh, there's another failure for Chris. There's another one. They were too busy invested in their own.
Yeah. And that's a great message as well, you know, because our youngsters struggle, don't they, sometimes with coping with failure or the pressures of life or succeeding. And we often put pressure on, you know, winning the medals or gaining the result when we're thinking about PE and school sport. And it's about the journey, and it's about that value added progress. And every little is something. Same as swimming. You know, I talked briefly, I think, in the last podcast about the fact that actually small gains are huge. So for some children in the swimming, for instance, it's getting on the bus to go because they're so anxious about it all. That's one small step. And then the next week, actually, we will take our swimming kit with us. And the next step, we might actually change into it and maybe put our toe in the water. But it's all about those little steps that build up over time.
You're right there. Right. You know, I coach and speak on a lot of stages, but I coach one-to-one online. And the one thing I always get my clients to do is stop focusing on the outcome and start focusing on the process. Because when we start focusing on the process, that's when we can influence and affect the outcome. When we're constantly looking at the outcome, we miss the chance to focus on the process. And it sounds so simple because it is, but it's not easy. And there's a big difference between simple and easy. But you're right. You know, you work on the progress, you work on the process, and the outcome invariably happens every time.
Yeah. And overcoming those barriers, if you like, as well.
Yeah.
You know, keeping a positive attitude about everything. So COVID has stopped school swimming, but what else can we do?
Exactly.
Talk about drown prevention, all of that, you know, it's now reopening in schools, et cetera. Yeah. So what are our strategic steps to support, you know, which children we're going to target first and what are we going to do about it and make every little bit count?
Yeah.
So important.
Definitely.
Thanks so much, Chris. You mentioned there about your mentoring and your coaching. I was in a CPD event with Sport England, and I've forgotten the name of the two presenters, but you were mentioned, or there was a picture or something, or there was a quote from you on one of the slides, something like that, and I popped in the chat. Oh, we all know Chris Cook, and you don't miss very well, like to you. So I was like, I must tell him that you were, it was either a picture or a quote, and it was to do with coaching and mentoring, and it was about the journey. I should have written it down so I could share it with you.
That's cool.
So, you know, tell me about how, you know, your motivational speaking has evolved now, I guess, into this specific one-to-one coaching and mentoring.
Yeah, so it's kind of organically happened. You know, I would get down off stage and people in business would come over and go, there's something here that I need to explore. Can I have a chat with you? And before I knew it, I was having these conversations one-to-one. I've obviously moved that all online now with COVID, and it's worked in my favor. You know, I lost a lot of my face-to-face business last year and went 8 months without any income, which was tricky. But then I was just willing to be agile and I moved online. I didn't want to, but now I see the massive benefit in it. Yeah. And started coaching people just one-to-one. In fact, after this podcast, I've got a client call at 9 o'clock with someone, and I'll be chatting about just all the stuff that kind of holds people back. It holds people in those old patterns that just don't, they don't serve us. And it's just, my job is to just ask enough questions and just scratch the surface to just shine a torch in maybe a space that they haven't checked, a blind spot, or just check around them. Is everything actually in full flow here? Or have we got the handbrake on with a foot on the accelerator at the same time, that weird mix? And often it's just that little subtle shift or that one conversation that makes someone go, I've seen what it is, I know what it is now, I'm off. And they go, and it just takes them in a completely different direction. That's the bit that I love. So I've kind of morphed it and changed it from the schoolwork. And I'll be honest with you, it's pretty much identical. It's identical, it's the same skills. It's just, we're just a little bit older. And I always say, just a few more wrinkles, that's it.
Yes.
The conversation's pretty much the same, and it's very similar things which hold people back. Imposter syndrome, or as I call it, imposter moments. It's not a syndrome. You know, those moments when you think, oh, it couldn't possibly be me. Well, yes, it can. Don't let that be the hurdle. And getting people to check their internal voice, the rhetoric that's going on, is it assisting you, or is it pulling you back? Just put it into one of the two categories, and often you'll find that it comes down to something very, very straightforward and simple, but often not easy to fix.
Yeah, wow, that's great. I mean, it's about that healthy mindset, isn't it?
Yeah.
And definitely. Some of those skills there that you've talked about, actually, you know, for our teachers with our youngsters, these are lesson elements and skills and knowledge that we want to develop with children right from that young age as well, to have a healthy mindset, and then use those skills into adulthood.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Chris. We've talked an awful lot about just about everything.
That's awesome. I've loved this.
Yeah, it's great to catch up.
Thank you.
And I'm sure that I'll be dropping you a message and saying, oh, let's do another one.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, and there's so much to explore, isn't there? Swimming, and then beyond into everything, so much.
Yeah.
So it'll be an interesting term for teachers coming back to school in September. Is there anything you would like to say to, you know, your primary class teacher who is worried about the swimming provision in their school? You know, what could they say to their senior leaders in school to make swimming a real priority?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I think swimming is such a personal journey. You know, you can't, my coach used to say to me, you can't get your mum to do your lengths for you. And it's so true. No one can do your homework for you in swimming. There's nowhere to hide. You have to turn up, you have to show up, and you have to repeat. And I think that's the main one to get across, is this is a personal journey. And bit like riding a bike, once you've got it under your belt, you've got it forever. That's a skill. It's an investment. It's an investment in their future. And I think there's so many things you could be learning whilst we're going through that swimming journey, about resilience, about coming back and returning again, that it's always got to come back to, the conversation has to come back to, what is that personal journey? What is happening in that personal journey? Because we all enter in at a slightly different level. We're all at different stages. But we can all exit swimming at pretty much the same standard. It's universal. It can happen in even children with disabilities. In fact, more so, because it's a bit of a leveler swimming. And it can help them, those children, just have that spatial awareness, that body awareness. And again, go on that personal journey of failure, success, failures, and just repeating it. So for me, it would be having that conversation with the head teacher to say, listen, this is a personal journey. How can we make it part of their education diet?
Yeah, wonderful. And with that, that's a fab message. I'm going to end it there. Mr. Chris Cook. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
I'm pressing the round of applause button now. Many thanks. We shall see you soon. Thanks for listening, everybody.